Amen.
All right, good morning. We are taking a pause in our Ezra Nehemiah study to do a current events talk, which we like to do at least 5 years, every 5 years. It seems like it has been a while since we had a current events talk. So this morning, our subject is When the Mystery of God Should Be Finished, and we'll begin with the reading there on the screen in Revelation chapter 10. And I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face was as it were the sun, and his feet as pillars of fire. And he had in his hand a little book open, and he set his right foot upon the sea, and his left foot upon the earth. And he cried with a loud voice, as when a lion roareth. And when he had cried, seven thunders uttered their voices. And when the seven thunders had uttered their voices, I was about to write. And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered, and write them not. And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever and ever, who created heaven and the things that therein are, and the earth and the things that therein are, and the sea, and the things which therein are therein, that there should be time no longer. But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished, as he hath declared to his servants the prophets. So I thought, amongst other things, this talk would also go very well with our Wednesday night studies with regards to the heaven and the earth, regarding the political heavens, the rulers, and what's happening there, and its effect upon the earth or the citizenry of those nations. So in our studies of the apocalypse, we're of the understanding that we are now living in the time of which the Spirit to John speaks, that is, in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, which he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished, as he hath declared to his servants the prophets. So what importance does this revelation have for us? I was afraid this is not advancing. Let's see if we can fix that. There we go. This seventh angel messenger began to sound over 230 years ago with the French Revolution, which began in 1789, which gave rise to three unclean spirits like frogs that go forth to gather the nations to Armageddon. That is the spirit of humanism, coined in the phrase liberty, equality, fraternity. The French, in essence, threw out ecclesiastical and governmental authority, or God and King, which has been the root principle of democracy, that is to say, rule by the people. That's what democracy really means, rule by the people, that will bring the nations to blows when the Almighty sends his Son, the King of the Jews, to claim his Davidic throne and assert his right as Lord of all the earth. Turn over, if you will, to the 14th chapter of the Apocalypse, and we're going to read verse 6 and 7. And I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and to every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment is come, and worship him that made heaven and earth, in the sea and the fountains of waters. First it won't work at all, and then it works too well. All right. when this announcement, which we call the Mid-Heaven Gospel, is made, and again, that Mid-Heaven Gospel proclamation, we believe, will be made following Armageddon, following the defeat of the Gog-Magog Confederacy on the mountains of Israel, when Christ and the saints are in Jerusalem. And when this announcement is made, it is going to be a problem that the nations will not be able to overcome by diplomacy or threats of economic sanctions, as is the norm today. So we can imagine they're going to get together just like they do in their G7 summits, and they're going to have a summit as to what to do with this problem that arises in the earth. Not even the media consorts among the nations, as they ramp up the propaganda stream of anti-Semitism and anti-Israel hatred, no doubt, will be able to prevail against the edicts of the King of Kings. As we look to this day, we would like to pause this morning in order to peer into the political heavens of recent history and the present. The political heavens of the day leave nothing to be desired. They are rank with the putridity of the flesh unrestrained. Be that as it may, there are events there to be reckoned, signposts, if you will, that when viewed together draw our eyes toward the inevitable conflict at hand, and a glorious conflict it will be. All that is wrong, prideful, selfish, and full of sin and death on the one hand will be thrown out and defeated. All that is right, majestic, merciful, with righteousness and life on the other will be all victorious. With that introduction, we will begin simply by making a list of what we expect to see as the great day of God Almighty approaches. And we're going to concentrate on the first three items on this list. Fortunately, I pared back my talk from the initial 14 pages. So hopefully we'll get this done by looking at the first three, but they're all certainly on the list. The turning back of Russia and rise to power upon the world stage. The separation of Great Britain from Europe, and in turn, the binding of Europe to Russia. Current unrest among nations at large for a number of reasons. An appeal of the papacy to popular culture, political correctness, and immorality. And that's becoming more prevalent every day, it would seem. The alienation of Israel and the Jews. Confusion among nations whipped up by the Fourth Estate media complex, hand in hand with academia and government institutions as to what is right and what is wrong. In other words, they have no moral compass. As we before warned, the political heavens are awash with the putridity of the flesh. Engaging there for long is unpleasant. But the whole of it can be expressed in the first phrase of Revelation 11:18, which records that the nations were angry. The nations were angry. Have you noticed any of that lately? The Greek word for nations in 11:18 of Revelation is ethnos, simply referring to, well, everybody. All of Gentiledom. Everybody is angry at everybody else. The Greek word translated anger means to provoke or enrage, become exasperated. Jeremiah in the 51st chapter records that the nations who have drunken from the Babylonian cup are mad. That's from the Hebrew halal, which carries with it the idea of being clamorously foolish. And when people are really angry and really foolish, they usually like to take it out on somebody. And that somebody we know from the word will be a little nation in the Middle East called Israel. And how do we know this? Revelation 16:16, and he gathered them, all of Gentiledom, together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon. Now, Armageddon, as we all know, means a heap of sheaves in the Valley of Judgment. But this refers not only to a place in time, but a place in geography, as was revealed to the prophet Joel in the third chapter, as the valley of Jehoshaphat, meaning Yah has judged. So in this map of ancient Israel, you can see this valley of Jehoshaphat goes from the north of the city down the east side, and is essentially synonymous, at least part of it, with what we call, or what they call, the Valley of Kedron. Now, that is not to suggest that this conflict is to take place geographically within the confines of this relatively small piece of real estate. What it does mean is that this small piece of real estate is at the center of the conflict. This gives the focal point, the valley of decision, the valley of judgment against the nations. Thus, when all is ready, the nations in anger will think an evil thought to satisfy their clamor and their foolishness, and would be brought as a heap of sheaves for the harvest that will occur in the valley of judgment. So if you look at that passage of Joel, we're not going to turn to it, but it talks about a great harvest there and a treading of wine of the winepress there also. So the harvest and the winepress, the same principles talked about in Revelation, the 14th chapter, the harvest and the winepress, or Armageddon, and then the battle that continues thereafter. Revelation 16:19, in the great city, that is the world powers constituting Babylon the Great, was divided into three parts. That is the great political military machine, which is Babylon, with all its massive economic engines of the world economy, together with all ecclesiastical and secular authorities, will come to an absolute and grinding halt. And the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. So their comeuppance is about to come up. So with a glimpse of the end picture here, let's now step back and consider a few events building in recent history that have brought us to what we believe is the cusp of the end time, or when the mystery of God should be finished. So we're going to step back and let's read in preparation for what we are about to go into, Ezekiel 38, 1 to 7, which should be very familiar to everyone. And the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against Gog, or Gog, in the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and prophesy against him. And say, thus saith Adonai Yahweh, behold, I am against thee, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and I will turn thee back, and put hooks into thy jaws, and I will bring thee forth, and all thy company, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, even a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords, Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya with them, all of them with shield and helmet, Gomer and all his bands, the house of Torgama of the north quarters, and all his bands, and many people with thee. Be thou prepared, and prepare for thyself, thou and all thy company that are assembled unto thee, and be thou a guard unto them. So in 1917, there was a revolution called the Bolshevik Revolution, which ended the rule of the church state empire of the Russian czars, which eventuated in the formation of the Soviet Union, or USSR, as it was called, on December 1921. And for 70 years, the people of Russia were essentially plunged into a dark ages of sorts behind an iron curtain of the totalitarian state. But that all changed. On December 26, 1991, the Union of the Soviet Socialist Republic collapsed and was dissolved by the Supreme Soviet. At that point, we would suggest to you, Russia was turned back in accordance with Ezekiel's specifications and in accordance with the divine scheme of things, with the rejection of an atheist-based communist state and a return or turning back to its original church-state roots, craftily engineered by the Elohim, of course, with the positioning of a Mr. Vladimir Putin. The phrase, "I will turn thee back," is actually one word, shub, and it means, again, to recall, recompense, recover, refresh, relieve, or render again. So what once was, and then was dissolved by the Bolshevik Revolution, was revived and has risen again, the Third Rome under the ecclesiastical influence of the Greek or Eastern Orthodox Church. And here's Mr. Putin pictured at a ceremony with Greek Orthodox Church leaders, and you'll notice the Greek flag flying over his head there. So we think of the brass element, the brass band that wraps the Babylonian stump. The Eastern Orthodox element there has revived under Russia. This has real world implications. Consider for a moment. A socialist atheist state, which was the USSR, has no real interest in the geopolitical or religious ambitions of the church. Conversely, a massive political and military machine, which is Russia today, under the influence of a state-sanctioned religious power in Catholicism, Eastern Orthodox form, is the sanctioned religion of Russia, and other religious elements are suppressed. All right, so just keep that in mind. So that military machine, which is Russia today, under the influence of a state-sanctioned religious power, bent on revenge against Muslim conquerors and Jewish usurpers, is a real threat to the status quo. Once becoming president of the Russian Federation, Putin quickly put in motion economic and political strategies to rebuild the Russian military on the one hand, while reestablishing close ties with the Russian Orthodox Church on the other. The two go hand in hand as the geopolitical ambitions and economic needs of the one feed the religious goals of the other. So what has Russia been up to since Putin's rise to power? Well, there's a long litany of things, and we're just going to touch on them quickly. In 2008, you'll remember, Russia made a coordinated land, air, and sea invasion of Georgia upon the auspices of defending the prominently Russian-backed, self-proclaimed republics of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. In doing so, the Russian army proved it could move rapidly to establish its presence in South Eurasia and Turkey. The West was caught off guard, and Russia made strategic inroads in the region. And by the way, in doing that, you'll notice top left, the Kodori Gorge. That's how you get through the Caucasus Mountains, is through that gorge. And that's what they accomplished. They captured that pass. Fast forward 6 years, and we have the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the annexation of Crimea in 2014. Despite this naked aggression, Russia won the media war by convincing the West that it was merely defending itself. And once again, the West showed itself incapable of restraining the Russian bear. So in these maps here, in the top left, you see where Russia made incursions from the north and the south and the east. So then by the early March, they had conquered this much, and then this much, and now Ukraine no longer exists on the Crimean Peninsula. It's all Russia. And incidentally, it's kind of ironic, all the talk about a Russian invasion of Ukraine and everybody on edge. What if Russia invades Ukraine? What if Russia invades Ukraine? Guess what? They already invaded Ukraine. Speaking of which, and the result of this passivity of the West, as we speak, now in 2022, the Russian army has well over 100,000 troops spread out in pockets along the Ukrainian border, particularly near territories where large concentrations of Russians are living. And they're doing some interesting things. For one, they are doing exercises, including live fire drills. So they're not just doing war games. They're actually doing live fire drills, making sure that their army is intimately familiar with how to load and fire their weapons as soon as possible. And next, Brother Matt actually pointed out this interesting development in Reuters last week. We got to hold a quote from that. Russia's military buildup near Ukraine has expanded to include supplies of blood, along with other medical materials that would allow it to treat casualties. And yet another key indicator of Moscow's military readiness. Three U.S. officials tell Reuters, current and former U.S. officials say concrete indicators like blood supplies are critical in determining whether Moscow would be prepared to carry out an invasion if Russian President Vladimir Putin decided to do so. So they're not just flexing their arms there. They're bringing up all the logistical elements necessary to carry out an invasion, including medical supplies and blood. So what is Mr. Putin after anyhow? In a speech last year, Putin said the loss of Ukraine was, quote, the disintegration of historical Russia, and that Russians and Ukrainians are, quote, one nation, and that Ukraine's leaders are running a, quote, anti-Russian project. Moreover, he blames the West for the whole situation, citing the British government, for one, as I'm not going to use the words that he uses, but he basically casts the entire British government as bumbling fools. And blames them for inciting incremental aggression against the Russian people via NATO expansion. And he has a point. So look at this map here. This is NATO expansion over the last 2.5 decades. All those orange nations, once members of the Warsaw Pact under Russian domination, are now NATO members, with the only Belarus, isn't NATO, but they're pro-Russian. And we'll see, we remember from the previous slide, Russia is actually staging troops in Belarus. Belarus has no issues with Russia. Ukraine, on the other hand, has issues with Russia, and they want to be a NATO member. So this is the line in the sand here for the Russians is Ukraine. So Putin has a point. He feels like Russia is being surrounded. This map chronicles NATO expansion over the last decade and a half, for which reason Russia has drawn a line in the sand over Ukraine. Again, the West huffs and puffs at the Russian bear for these assertions, but not understanding the Russian perspective. that Kiev, the capital of Ukraine, is in fact the cradle of Russian civilization. So if you dig back in your history books, you'll find that the Tsar's dominion is hereditarily descended from Rurik of the family of Rus, of Scandinavian origin. So that's would be Sweden. Sweden, which first appears in history around 862. Rurik, pictured on the left there, was invited by the Scythians to become their sovereign. He accepted the invitation and founded the Grand Duchy of Great Russia, whose capital was first in Novgorod, Russia. Novgorod is still in Russia today, but then afterwards settled at Kiev, which is currently the capital of Ukraine. It's noteworthy that the coat of arms of the Great Duchy of Great Russia is the bear, as far back as the 9th century, as we see this symbol in prophecy and still connected with Russia today. Eventually, the Russian center of power was transferred to the Grand Principality of Moscow in the mid-14th century by descendants of the family dynasty, which was also becoming the center of influence in the region of the Eastern Orthodox Church. 100 years later, Moscow, this is where the church leaders of the East fled following the fall of Constantinople, declaring Russia the Third Rome. So, what of Russian influence in other areas of interest? In September 2015, Russia began the deployment of air, sea, and ground forces into Syria to end the Syrian civil war against rebel and jihadist groups in opposition to Assad's regime. While the numbers may seem small, less than 20,000 regular army, there are nevertheless significant military resources stationed there, including air and sea power. It's only a matter of time. The Russian bear has a foothold here, and he is not likely to let go. We would note from Revelation 13:2, when the latter-day beast of the sea rears its head once more in the form of the Assyrian image of Nebuchadnezzar, which is also the Gog of Ezekiel, that the feat or mode of operation of this dreadful beast is that of a bear. That is to say, Russia will be at the wheel driving the nations headlong. This is the day whereof I have spoken, Yahweh says by the Spirit to Ezekiel. Notable quote from Brother Thomas kind of sums this up. Better get a sip of water before I go into that. When John's beast of the sea comes, in fact, to stand upon its four brazen-clawed bare feet, its dominion will consist of the Russian Empire, continental and Mediterranean Europe, Persia, Ethiopia or Kush, Iraq, Libya, Targama or Turkey and Armenia, Egypt and Syria. When the throne of the Russian autocrat is transferred, note what he says here, when the throne of the Russian autocrat is transferred to Constantinople, so that's where our friends in the Eastern Orthodox Church come into play, the apocalyptic bare feet, armed with their brazen or Greek Orthodox claws, will also be enthroned there and be prepared for the work that remains of stamping the residue. The residue that yet remains to be stamped are the many countries to be overthrown, inclusive of Turkey, Egypt, and part of the Glorious Land. There's a lot to digest there. So Constantinople first, and then Turkey, the other side of the Bosphorus. So you have Constantinople is on the north side, and the rest of Turkey or Asia Minor is on the south side of the Bosphorus, and then the Holy Land. So with that, let's look at another piece of the puzzle. The separation of Great Britain from Europe and the binding of Europe to Russia. So you notice that Angela Merkel is not pictured here. It's because she's no longer prime minister. So it's now Mr. Schultz. So seeing that Europe is also involved in this great conflict on the horizon, how are things shaping up there? Once it was thought that USSR would bind Europe by overthrowing it militarily, as they threatened a number of occasions at the heights of the Cold War. For all the rhetoric, however, such a move would set Europe and Russia apart as enemies, instead of the mutual pact that we see marked out in the pages of Scripture. No, the Elohim, we believe, have thankfully mapped out another course which takes the UK and the remaining Anglo alliance out of the picture on the one hand, while Europe becomes more dependent upon Russia on the other. So how has this happened? Well, first, we had exit, or rather Brexit, of the UK from Europe, stage left. Let's go over to Isaiah 23. We're not going to do an exposition of that, but we just want to touch upon it. We'll just pick up 14 to 18. Isaiah 23, 14. Howl, ye ships of Tarshish, for your strength is laid waste. And it shall come to pass in that day that Tyre shall be forgotten 70 years, according to the days of one king. So we believe that that time period began around 1947-48, when Great Britain turned its back on Israel. And if you'll look at a map on the about the British Empire, you will see that actually it goes back to even earlier, but they lost their empire over a number of years, and we're at the terminus of that period. So Tyre was forgotten. The sun which never set on the British Empire dissolved. After the end of 70 years shall Tyre sing as an harlot. Take an harp, go about the city, thou harlot that has been forgotten. Make sweet melody, sing many songs, that thou mayest be remembered. And it shall come to pass at the end of 70 years, which is where we are today, the Lord will visit Tyre, and he shall turn to her hire, and shall commit fornication with the kingdoms of the world upon the face of the earth. So we are at the time where Great Britain has set sail from continental Europe and is forging her own economic destiny. So for that to happen, she first had to be unshackled from years of bondage to Catholic Europe and the common market. Thus, UK has gotten the idea that they are better off economically and politically without European currency, without European economic policy, and without European integration of an enormous alphabet soup of humanist ideas, aka the frog spirits at work. In short, Brexit sets Great Britain and her allies aside from the European beast, and this is exactly what we have been expecting prophetically. Why? Let's go over to Ezekiel 38:13. So we've got to make kind of put some dots together, so bear with us here as we trail through this. Why have we been expecting Britain to be separate from Europe? Ezekiel 38:13. Sheba and Dedan with the merchants of Tarshish, with all the young lions thereof, So Britain is the old lion. The young lions are the Anglo-colonial nations. Shall say unto thee, Gog, the northern invader, art thou come to take a spoil? Hast thou gathered thy company to take a prey, to carry away silver and gold, to take away cattle and goods, and to take a great spoil? So we see the Tarshish nations, the old lion of Britain and the young lions, which we might presume Canada, the United States, Australia, New Zealand, are going to be on this Anglo-Tarshish power that opposes the king of the north, the Gogian invader, the autocrat. Let's go over to Psalm 45, 11 and 12. Let's put another milestone on the map. Psalm 45, 11 and 12. So this brother Mac has been speaking about the bride in Song of Solomon and referring to this psalm and speaking of this bride in her glorious redemption. The psalmist says, so shall the king greatly desire thy beauty, for he is thy Lord, and worship thou him. So this is the time of the establishment of the kingdom of God. Verse 12, and the daughter of Tyre, not Tyre itself, but the daughter, that system of merchandising that has developed out of her, shall be there with a gift. Even the rich among thy people shall entreat thy favor. So back in Isaiah, Tyre or Tarshish is expected to gain great wealth out of her forging her own economic destiny. But that wealth is not to remain hers. The daughter of Tyre shall be there at Jerusalem with a gift to bring their wealth to the King of Kings. Psalm 72:10. Psalm 72:10. And the kings of Tarshish and the Isles shall bring their presents. The kings of Sheba and Seba shall offer gifts. Yea, all kings shall fall down before him. All nations shall serve him. So remember again, in Ezekiel 38, we saw Sheba, Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish on the opposite side of the aims of the Gogian Confederacy. Isaiah 60, verse 9. Surely the isle shall wait for me, and the ships of Tarshish first, to bring thy sons from far, their silver and their gold with them, to the name of the Lord thy God, to the Holy One of Israel, because he hath glorified thee. So these Tarshish Anglo nations will literally use their ships to bring the Jews back to the land. So again, I think this is post-Armageddon, post-proclamation of the Mid-Heaven Gospel, during which the Jews will be enlightened as to what is going on, and they will be brought back to the land, and Tarshish, the ships thereof, will literally be involved in that process. So let's go full circle back to Ezekiel, 39th chapter, which I think helps explain why this divorce between Britain and Europe had to take place, and why we expected it so. Ezekiel 39, verse 4. And let's get this right, who this is talking about. Thou. The thou here is in verse 1. Therefore, thou son of man, prophesy against Gog. So Gog of the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshech, and Tubal, with Gomer, or France, with Magog, Germany, and many people with thee, the Persians, the Ethiopians, what's going to happen to them? Verse 4, thou shalt fall upon the mountains of Israel, thou and all thy bands, and the people that is with thee, I will give thee unto the ravenous birds of every sort, and to the beasts of the field to be devoured. In other words, they are going to be destroyed. So it would make no sense for the Anglo-Tarshish nations to be part of that group, for then how would they fulfill their destiny marked out that we just read of bringing their wealth to Jerusalem, of bringing the Jewish people from afar in their ships? So there had to be this separation, there had to be this divorce, as it were, between Catholic Europe and Protestant Britain for this to take place. All right. So while the full establishment of Britain, Brexit, could take several years, it could take a decade for all we know, this has had an enormous destabilizing effect for Europe. France and Germany, the leaders, are furious and feel betrayed. Trade wars, disputes over fishing rights, and diplomatic brinkmanship abound on every side. Even European Union member states disagree on how to handle the divorce or even how to get along with one another. Meanwhile, Russia naturally looks upon these matters with great pleasure, seeing how that things are going very well from their perspective. The UK and Europe are now at odds with one another. Europe itself is becoming more unstable without a definitive political or economic plan for the future. So is that enough? Will Russia now just sit back and relax and wait to see how the cards will fall? Not at all. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 3. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. Behold, his soul which is lifted up is not upright in him, but the just shall live by faith. Yea, also because he transgresseth by wine, he is a proud man, neither keepeth at home, who enlargeth his desire as hell, and is as death, and cannot be satisfied, but gathereth unto him all nations, and heapeth unto him all people. Shall not all these take up a parable against him, and a taunting proverb against him, and say, woe to him that increaseth that which is not his? How long, and to him that ladeth himself with thick clay? So think about those feet of Nebuchadnezzar's image, which are made of miry clay. He ladeth himself with thick clay, so the Russian autocrat does. This is Habakkuk's perspective of the clay-footed Russian autocrat. He is a proud man. He cannot keep at home. That is, he must continue meddling in foreign affairs as suits his purpose. He moves his plans forward no matter what, and cannot be satisfied until the gathering of the nations by the Spirit is complete. So what other moves might Vladimir have up his sleeve? And how have the Elohim arranged it such that continental Europe will play right into Russia's hands? In a word, energy. Germany has 6 nuclear power plants and has already shuttered 3 of them. The remaining 3, Emsland, Isar, and Neckarwestheim, will be powered down by the end of 2022. The plan of the German leaders is to ramp up clean energy sources such as solar and wind to replace these power plants. But is that realistic? 41% of German energy currently comes from fossil fuel, such as coal and natural gas, 13% from nuclear. Shuttering these plants While solar and wind have proved to be inconsistent and weather dependent, will increase reliance on Russian energy from the current 35% to over 50%. Moreover, Germany has declared that it will utilize natural gas as a bridge to future renewable resources that don't yet exist. They will use natural gas as a bridge to future renewable resources that don't yet exist. And we might add that Vladimir Putin is only too happy to oblige. Enter the Nord Stream 2 pipeline across the Baltic Sea, direct from Russia to Germany, bypassing current pipelines. Excuse me, losing my voice again. That picture of Putin, by the way, little tongue-in-cheek, is from The Economist magazine a few years ago. So they had it right on the money. Enter the Nord Stream 2 pipeline across the Baltic Sea, direct from Russia to Germany, bypassing current pipelines that enter Germany via the Ukraine. Another reason why Russia is interested in Ukraine, they don't like paying royalties on the sale of natural gas. However, on November, the intrigue builds. On November 16th of this past year, European natural gas prices climbed by 17% after Germany's energy regulator suspended approval of this now complete Nord Stream 2 pipeline. On 9th of December 2021, Polish Prime Minister, he has quite a name, I don't know if I'll get it right, Mateusz Morawiecki, called on Germany's newly appointed Chancellor Olaf Scholz to oppose the startup of Nord Stream 2 and not to give in to pressure from Russia. On a visit to Rome, he said the following: "I will call on Chancellor Scholz not to give in to pressure from Russia and not to allow Nord Stream 2 to be used as an instrument for blackmail against Ukraine, an instrument for blackmail against Poland, an instrument for blackmail against the European Union." The pipeline, as we said, is now complete, but not yet operational due to a host of legal challenges, technical and regulatory certifications, and so forth. In any case, will Morawiecki's warning to Europe be heeded? There are a number of circumstances coming into play, again, we believe, all arranged by the Elohim, that appear to make Nord Stream 2 inevitable for Europe. First, you would think it would have nothing to do with it, but it does. U.S. foreign policy. The current administration's, U.S. administration's reversal of previous energy policy plays right into Russian strategic goals. And of course, we might add the prophetic blueprint. First, if you hadn't noticed, gas prices in this country have more than doubled due to the cancellation of pipeline projects that would have brought petroleum from Canada into the United States. Energy policy has consequences, and this move has impacted the global market, not just what you see at the gas pump here in town. It has impacted the global market, causing prices everywhere except the Middle East and Russia, interestingly, to skyrocket. Second, as if to offer the Europeans an olive branch to account for this change in U.S. policy, the current U.S. administration acquiesced to the completion of Russia's Nord Stream 2 natural gas pipeline, which they before opposed, and said it will not interfere with German-Russian relations or deals over energy. The Heritage Foundation's Europe report for January 2022 notes that this is a historic mistake that will increase Russia's ability to play the energy trump card, undermine U.S. allies in Europe, and threaten transatlantic security. We would note that this is not so much a mistake. Rather, it is simply, from our perspective, the Elohim at work. The Almighty controls the weather. Let's look at Psalm 135, 5 to 7. Psalm 135, 5. For I know that Yahweh is great, and that our Lord is above all gods. Whatsoever the Lord pleased, that did he, in the heaven and in the earth and in the seas, and in all deep places, he causeth the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He maketh lightnings for the rain. He bringeth the wind out of his treasuries or storehouses. So Yahweh, the Elohim, control the weather. The winter outlook for the United States and Europe is already colder than predicted, due to, as they call it, La Nina, which refers to the movements of the air on a global scale. So you can see here on this map, North America, our brethren in Canada are apparently getting it cold up there. It wraps right around the North Pole and right down through Europe. So in this map, just to kind of orient you, here's England, here's Europe, Germany, France, Spain, okay? The Rock of Gibraltar right there, Mediterranean Sea. So this is north, this weather pattern is just skipping across the north tip of Africa and then back out into the Atlantic. So that you see all of Europe is in a deep freeze. Europe is having a very cold winter in particular, and the need for energy is up just at a time when energy supplies are down, which brings us to the next point. Energy shortages. Europe is already short in its strategic reserve of natural gas due to the fact that temperatures began falling quite early this winter. To compensate, Europeans are facing energy blackouts. So what's a blackout? Well, that's when they turn your power off because they don't have enough power to go around. We found the following quote from Bloomberg to be interesting in this respect. Yeah, let's see. Oh, I'm just going to quote that one to you. I thought I had it over on an overhead, so you just have to listen up. Get ready for a cold and dark winter, with the risk of rolling blackouts in Europe growing after some of France's nuclear reactors, so not only Germany is turning them off, France is turning them off, after some of France's nuclear reactors were halted, and yet another blow to the region's embattled energy markets. It is set to leave citizens across the bloc facing soaring electricity costs as they attempt to heat their homes during the coldest part of the year. It also poses a political challenge to national leaders and the EU, which is trying to sell a green overhaul of the economy while everybody is freezing and in the dark. With electricity prices showing little sign of stabilizing, member states will have to depend on domestic measures to blunt the impact of rising prices in the short term. EU leaders clashed over how to address the energy crunch at their Brussels summit, urging deeper carbon and power market supervision, but unable to agree on new measures. Unquote. Energy prices. Again, all these things feeding into why we believe Nord Stream 2 is inevitable. Related to weather, wind generators on the North Sea, very calm this past year, are at a standstill. And individual energy bills in the UK, for example, are up by 50% over last year. In Fortune magazine, we found this quote about the situation. This is back in September. The exponential growth of offshore wind farms in the North Sea has been a testament to the combined efforts of the European countries investing time, effort, and money in the decarbonization of their electricity grids. But just as Europe needs energy the most, the wind in the North Sea has stopped blowing. Remember, who controls the weather? Forcing regional energy markets to scramble for gas reserves to heat homes and power businesses. This has had expensive consequences. As the European energy market grows increasingly reliant on a renewable energy source that is cheap to harness and carbon emissions free, but is clearly unreliable when the wind isn't blowing. Surging electricity bills are an unintended consequence of the energy transition. But UK energy bills are nothing compared to continental Europe. Prices for natural gas in Europe are 15 times what we pay for here in the United States. By way of context, I asked Sister Anita what we pay to fill up our propane tank about every other month. So that comes to about $200. And we only use that for cooking and the gas logs. So 15 times that would be $3,000 a fill, if you can imagine. So we're paying $200, $3,000 a fill. So I think we'd stop cooking on the gas stove. Be time to pull out the wood stove. What does this mean in geopolitical terms? It means that Europe is in the throes of a serious energy crisis, and the citizenry, as we've been studying in our Wednesday class, apocalyptically described as the Earth, is quite fed up with the political luminaries about it. So there they have this beautiful new pipeline from Russia to their continent, and it's off. And at the same time, their leaders are turning off the nuclear plants. So Isaiah says, the nations are mad. All right, our last point for today. Current unrest among nations at large. Try to wrap this up. Let's add all this up. The nations are amok with self-inflicting policies brought on by humanist philosophy from which it cannot extricate itself. War is looming large in the Ukraine, which would further destabilize Europe. If Russia invades, then Europe and the West may try to enforce economic sanctions, which would be more hurtful to themselves than they would be to Russia. And we have to remember that Russia has said that they are willing to, quote unquote, take it if in the end it gets them what they want. Besides, Russia is holding all the energy cards, and the Elohim, we believe, are on their side with regard to the energy crisis looming in Europe. This crisis, which has subsequent economic and quality of life consequences, cannot be sustained and will not likely be tolerated by the earth or the citizenry. While the elite luminaries drive their luxury automobiles and fly their Learjets to Brussels to debate global warming. On top of this, let's not forget the elephant in the room, COVID-19, and the subsequent stress on the economy, the citizenry, and even stressed relations between allied nations due to disagreements on how to handle the health crisis and the enforcement of policies across international boundaries. Last, at the terminus of all these things, we have Israel, home to the holiest sites of Orthodox Christianity. Crossroads to three continents. Developer of some of the largest gas reserves on the planet. In the Levantine Mediterranean Basin, known as Tamar, Dalit, and Leviathan. The energy treaty signed between Greece, Cyprus, and Israel, and supported by the previous U.S. administration to develop these energy sources, will make Israel energy independent. In December 2019, a major Greek news outlet reported, this was their forecast with this project, EastMed Pipeline. So let's first be clear. The EastMed Pipeline runs from the Levantine Basin, that's where those three gas fields are located off Israel's course, to Cyprus, and then up through Greece, eventually into Europe in two directions. So that is this EastMed Pipeline that we're talking about here. So EastMed Pipeline, the Mediterranean mega project that will change Europe's energy map forever. Problem solved. Well, not so fast. While the project indeed has the potential to solve the current European energy crisis via the EastMed pipeline to southern Europe, the current U.S. administration capitulated to political pressure from Turkey and Russia to cancel the project. This happened shortly after the U.S. election, with a letter to the Greek government expressing so-called economic and environmental concerns. Again, Putin is smiling all the way to the bank. Supplies down, prices up. Putin has successfully stymied the competition and will get to Israel and their enormous gas reserves in due time. Control Europe first, and then the Middle East. Let's go back to Ezekiel 38. Ezekiel 38, 11 and 12. And thou shalt say, I will go up to the land of unwalled villages, and I will go to them that are at rest and dwell safely, all of them dwelling without walls and having neither bars nor gates, to take a spoil, to take a prey, to turn thine hand upon the desolate places that are now inhabited, and upon the people that are gathered out of the nations which have gotten cattle and goods and dwell in the midst of the land. And turn over to Daniel 11. He shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief children of Ammon. He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. But he shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and Ethiopians shall be at his steps. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain, which is Jerusalem. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. Thus is the demise of the Russian autocrat. In summary, we have reviewed only a few of the many, many events that herald the coming of the Lord in accordance with the word of the prophets, declaring the end of Gentile time and the beginning of a new order of Edenic splendor. The world is right now being conditioned to respond in the manner required by the divine blueprint. The frog spirit beckons unrest among the citizenry, styled the earth. The political heavens, on the other hand, are helpless to withstand the divine gravity that aligns the political sun, moon, and stars in preparation for their removal. In the meantime, we have our own preparation to be concerned with. The Elohim will take care of all that needs to happen in the political heavens and earth. Our part is to maintain our standing and focus upon our wonderful heritage in the promises and hope of Israel, which draws nigh to fulfillment. We'll leave you with this thought, which is one of my favorite quotes from Exposition of Daniel. The reduction of the promises of deity to these accomplished facts must be the extinction of all the governments and powers of Europe and Asia, and the substitution of the Israelitish dominion in their place, when Israel shall be Yahweh's firstborn among the nations of the coming age. Thank you.